outside of the Bible, the greatest two documents that have ever been penned are the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. And the reason those two documents have lasted for 230 years is because they were written on the knees of the framers.
This is the voice of the Colorado Liberty Movement.
I'm not a sixth grader. It's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I study the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated.
Live from Studio 56, this is Grassroots Radio Colorado.
Let's be clear about one thing. We're not here to rebrand a party. We're not here to put a fresh coat of rhetorical paint on our party. We're not here to abandon our principles in a contest of government giveaways. We're here to rebuild a country.
Now, Chris Cook with Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.
Freedom, liberty, truth.
American woman, I said get away. American woman, listen what I say.
Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. I do have some breaking news, and obviously our signal does not reach to Grand Junction, but if you have folks that you know who are over there, there have been two shootings in downtown Grand Junction. There is at least one dead that we know of, a man with an obviously fatal wound to his head in the middle of Grand Avenue near 8th Street, if you're familiar with that area. And then there was another young man, 25 years old, who was shot by police as he tried to carjack. It was an apparent attempted carjacking a few blocks away from there. So perhaps those are connected, perhaps not. Originally looked like a traffic accident involving five cars. Now it is a shooting. So we'll keep you posted. I'll try to keep an eye on what's going on over there. Boy, that's just... let's just hope this doesn't blow up into something more than that. And that is enough, more than enough. What a tragic thing. So hearts out to those folks and hope that everything is well as can be. Okay, we were going to talk about Hillary's foreign policy failures, but the reason why this is coming up right now is because the media is continuing to hammer the GOP candidates for president about what would they have done in Iraq if they have a time machine. You know, come on. You know, knowing what you know now, would you have done what they did then? It's a no-win question. It's stupid. It's a no-win question that, you know, knowing what we know now, would you have invaded at that time? Anybody with half a brain. And that's all that's required. In fact, it may be less than half a brain. Maybe five or six brain cells knows that it was the right decision at the time to go into Iraq. We all know this. The only people who protest loudly that we didn't need to do that, it seems, are the folks who have decided for whatever reason that they are going to stand against us doing anything outside of our shores. And that can be far left, that can be libertarians, whomever you are. And I know that there are a few of you in my audience, and so please don't take offense. But we had 23 writs against Saddam Hussein, only three of which had anything to do with weapons of mass destruction, stockpiles of which have since been found in Syria being used against Syrians. Have been found by ISIS and are being used against the Yazidi, against the Kurds, against Iraqis. Okay, so the weapons of mass destruction piece that everybody continues to hammer on, completely invalid. Plus, there were 20 other reasons that Congress agreed on, passed resolutions about, to go into Iraq to take down Saddam Hussein. So if you want to ignore those 20 other reasons and then say that there were no WMDs, perhaps you have a point. But there were 23 of these resolutions that said, you know what? The thing is, Saddam Hussein is a danger to the globe and needs to be taken down. And that is what we did. It was the right decision to go into Iraq. And so for the media to continue to hit the GOP about this, it just blows my mind. Is this really what they spend their time doing, is thinking up dumb questions like this? It blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. John Sununu, who was, of course, George H.W. Bush's chief of staff. He says, when you ask the question, knowing what we know now, nobody knows what you mean. Nobody knows what you mean. It's a stupid question. Does that include knowing that the bulk of Saddam Hussein's sarin gas went to Syria, where al-Assad is using it? As what Sununu asked, does it mean that President Obama is going to fail? Does it mean knowing then that Obama was going to fail to get a status of forces agreement and we would yank all of our personnel out and create a vacuum for ISIS? Does it include that? Does it include any of those things, any of the other things that have happened under Obama's watch? And worse, with Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State, where they have created these situations. Now, they didn't create Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein rose out of a lot of complicated stuff. and the Al-Qaeda and the Shia and the Sunni, and there's a lot of things there. I wish I was much more of an expert on this. I'm not. But they have failed. Clinton and Obama both have failed since 2008 to address the Middle East or basically any other part of the globe the way that responsible foreign policy dictates that those things be handled, and so have created the situation that we see now in Iraq, where ISIS is now, what, 50 miles away from Baghdad? They've taken Ramadi. It's because of us. It is because of us. We took down Saddam Hussein, who was oppressing his people, who was annihilating his people, his citizens, the folks who lived in Iraq. He was doing that to his own citizens. He was posing a threat to the entire region. And we went in and we were able to remove that threat. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a good thing, okay? When you eradicate at least a little part of evil off of the planet, then I think we can celebrate that a little bit. What you don't then do with that victory is to throw it to the dogs, which is what Obama and Clinton have done, especially Clinton. And the reason why I want to focus on Hillary is, first of all, why are none of the media asking Hillary this question, besides the fact that she won't speak to the media right now? she was asked the other day if she would take some, questions from the military or from the media. And she very sarcastically replied, "I will definitely consider that. I will put it on my list of things to consider." I mean, really, what an arrogant witch. How arrogant can you be to criticize them for doing their jobs? To criticize them for doing their jobs. That's the thing. That's just kind of blows my mind. So that's the first thing. She needs to be held accountable. And what we need to do in order to do that, since she won't answer the questions, we need to look back over these foreign policy failures. I'm going to list them. I'm just going to list them between now and the break, because that's what it takes. That's how long it's going to take. Let's look at China. China is being aggressive in the South China Sea. They are taking over islands. They are building islands, believe it or not, so that they can expand China's territory within the South China Sea. That is an aggressive stance. They know that the U.S. is not going to challenge them. They know that. What about Russia? What about what happened in Crimea? What about what's happened in the Ukraine? And what about the encouragement that Hillary has given and Obama has given to Vladimir Putin? Okay? Thugs. Thugs are running Russia, and we're allowing them to run roughshod over the world. Not only has Hillary Clinton allowed the rise of Putin, but she sold half of the U.S.'s uranium production to Russia. That's what she's done to line her own pockets. This is a foreign policy failure of a magnitude. This is corruption of a magnitude that is just beyond, absolutely beyond. I'll get to the rest of them after we get back from the break. We've got John on the line. And John, I will get back to you just as soon as we come back. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook, and we're talking about Hillary and her absolute failures as a Secretary of State. The reason why this is important is because she is running for president based on her tenure as Secretary of State. See, she knows something about foreign policy. She's got more frequent flyer miles than pretty much anybody else on the planet because she was Secretary of State, but that does not qualify her to be president. So we need to look at the decisions that were made and the effects of those decisions on global, on the status of the globe, and determine whether or not we ought to trust her as dog catcher. And which I would submit we should not. We do have John on the line who's been holding very patiently. John, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Yes, Chris. I have a comment on what you were saying about the hypothetical of if we knew what we knew now, would you have gone into Iraq?
Okay.
I agree with you. That's not a good question. The reality is that the press will be asking questions like that. And I think in our process of vetting our candidates and deciding who we're going to back, we need to look at how they responded. And I think that Jeb Bush's handling of it was, frankly, not at a high grade as far as communications. And I think that's all the more reason I don't support Jeb Bush because of his stance on Common Core and on immigration. But from a political standpoint, I think he showed that he's really not ready for prime time.
You are so generous, John, about Jeb Bush. That's very true. Rubio stumbled on it too, though. And except for his stance on immigration, I like Rubio. I think he's one of our best communicators, as Andy Pate has said a number of times. But I think, don't you think that the proper response to a question like that is about the dumbest question I've ever heard. What do you mean, knowing what we know now? And ask Sununu's list of you know, things that have happened since we invaded Iraq. What do you think?
Well, I think really, with hindsight, I think that probably the best thing would have been to have said, what the real question is why do we have the problems that we have now in Iraq? And the reason that we have the problems we have in Iraq now is because Obama did not leave residual forces there. He did not get a status of forces agreement. We had won that war, and Obama turned that into a loss.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. John, thank you so much for calling into Grassroots Radio. I appreciate your comments. And this is just one of those things. And he's right. You know, the media is going to ask stupid questions. They're going to ask questions made and designed to make our candidates look dumb, or look like flip-floppers, or whatever it is that they want to elicit. We need to make sure that our candidates are up to snuff in handling the media, in recognizing when there is a presumed premise there. You know, excuse me, Mr. Johnson, but when did you stop beating your wife? You know, that kind of thing. And get them on board with how to handle this stuff, and handle it with aplomb. I think that would be the thing that we need to do. We've got David on the line from Denver. David, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Yes, actually, and I'm not speaking to you directly, Chris, but fact of the matter is, given what we see has happened to the Christians of the Middle East since we started meddling over there, for whatever reasons, good, bad, or indifferent, someone would have to have a cruel and evil heart to look at that and say that anything we have done was for the good. The Christian community of Iraq that was there before Islam was even invented has been wiped out, and it's our fault.
You think that's our fault?
Yes.
How is that our fault?
By our naivete in political correctness, in not accepting the reality of what Islam is, we went in there and started dancing around and saying, freedom for everybody, freedom for everybody. Freedom solves everything.
I doubt there was a lot of dancing, David, but that's okay.
Well, that was how stupid we were. And in fact, with Islam, freedom does not solve that. The Christians of Iraq and all throughout the Middle East the remnants of their civilizations that were still there had figured out over the centuries how to survive with Islam, how to keep their head down and not aggravate the Muslims, or they would be killed. And what we did, because we are so brainwashed into this multiculturalism and just idiocy.
I don't think that was the reason we went in there
thinking that we could give them freedom.
That's not the case, David. What we were in there to do was to remove Saddam Hussein as the leader of Iraq, and there were many, many reasons to do so.
He was controlling the Muslims. I remember all the joyousness when they, with the purple fingers, when they supposedly were voting over there.
I remember that.
And it's shameful because we still do not understand what Islam is, and we're allowing it into the West. So we not only have the blood of the Iraqi Christians on our head, but we're going to have our own Christians in America. Their blood is going to be on our hands as well, because we won't see it in our lifetime, but future generations of Christians in America will suffer exactly the same fate that the Iraqi Christians have. Well, Islam does not play by the same rules as Christianity does. And people, it's just a shame that our Christian pastors and leaders in the West have forsaken their civilization. And in order to be accepted by the politically correct, they are willing to sell out their own brethren.
David, I think, and I appreciate your comments, I truly do, but I just want to say that, first of all, if we just hole up here in the United States, put up 80-foot walls or 800-foot walls or whatever, like on Game of Thrones. I mean, is that what we want to build around the U.S. and become isolationists, and we'll never, ever, ever go anywhere, and we'll never, ever, ever let anyone in? I don't believe that that's a life that I want to live in America, okay? Let's just start there. The second point is that there were many, many reasons to go into Iraq and remove Saddam Hussein, and there were many, many reasons to stay there. There should have been a status of forces agreement. That was Hillary's responsibility, to negotiate a status of forces agreement for our troops on the ground in Iraq to keep things peaceful. And that is not what happened. And so we withdrew and we created a vacuum. And that failure, not the original invasion to remove this very evil man who was doing horrible things to his people, and especially to the Christians. We were in there to save them. But it was our withdrawal of all of our troops. It was that withdrawal due to the failure to get a status of forces agreement and to establish the legality of what we were doing under Iraqi law in that country with the democratic folks that we had helped get into place, that we created this vacuum that allowed ISIS to suck into Iraq and allowed ISIS to take over the northern part and allowed ISIS to annihilate the Yazidis, to annihilate the Kurds, to do the horrible things that they have done. Now, the Kurds are fighting back. Okay, the Kurds are fighting back, and that is a positive thing. I'm glad to see them fighting for their freedom. I wish we could help them. Under this president, we won't. We will abandon them to their fate. We will abandon fellow citizens of the globe, if you'll forgive me for using that phrase, to just try to put it together. They are so horribly outnumbered, and we could help. But we won't. And the thing is, the reason why we won't is because this president is not just an apologist for the Muslim Brotherhood. He is an advocate for the Muslim Brotherhood. He is an advocate for these people who want to absolutely wipe any sort of freedom, any sort of non-Sharia, non-caliphate civilization off the face of the planet. They want our destruction, and Obama wants our destruction just as much. And so he is starting in the Middle East. That is what he is doing, is starting in the Middle East, starting in Russia, starting in China. And Clinton is absolutely complicit. She's more than complicit. Look at who her close advisors are. Look at who her close advisors are. What's her face? Help me, Charlie. Who's the Mary D'Anthony Weiner? Uma Abedin. Thank you. and then I find it right there. Uma Abedin, okay? She is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. She is related to the Muslim Brothers. She's an advisor for them. She's been a fundraiser for CARE. And she was a top advisor, deputy chief of staff for Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. If you think for a second, when you have Huma Abedin advising the Secretary of State, that we're going to do anything to upset the Muslim Brotherhood, the organization, the single organization established in 1926 for the explicit purpose of spreading Sharia law all over the world. That is their purpose. And the Muslim Brotherhood has infiltrated the top echelons of the United States government. Okay? That is what's going on. So that, When you start seeing all these pieces come together, you begin to understand what happened in Iraq, why we failed to negotiate a status of forces agreement. It is almost like, and maybe it is, Obama and Clinton going over there and rolling out the red carpet for ISIS to march their way into Iraq, all the way up to Ramadi at this point. All the way up to Ramadi, and they pay lip service that, these are brutal and they don't represent Islam. And BS. It just doesn't fly. It does not fly. When you look at the facts, when you look at what's happened, it does not fly. You start to see all of these things come together. Benghazi, the Arab Spring, Iraq, Iran. Obama is actively working towards a nuclear Iran. Actively working towards it. We've got Boko Haram, we've got Al-Shabaab, we've got the Taliban, we've got Hamas, all of which have been defended or advocated by this administration. It all goes back to the Muslim Brotherhood. Never, ever forget that. And that is the thing that is absolutely stomach turning when you start looking at this woman, her record as Secretary of State, and her gall, her arrogance to run for president. It cannot happen. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. I want to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood in the New York Times up next. 303-477-5600. I love that bass line. That's just such a good song. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. I'm Chris Cook. Get my funk on a little bit. Doobie Brothers. Charlie just shakes his head. If you'd like to come, join the conversation, give me a call. 303-477-5600. We're talking about foreign policy failures of Hillary Clinton. And in particular, I want to talk about Egypt. And the reason why is because Mohamed Morsi has been condemned at this point to death by Egypt's new government that took over when they deposed him during the Egyptian Spring or during the Arab Spring. And the editorial that caught my eye today, it just shocks me. On the same pages that the New York Times defends homosexual marriage, propagates this lie that women are paid 77 cents for every dollar, and tries to talk about sexism and fight back against that, and for these very same pages that the New York Times editorial board puts forth these ideas, they then become apologists for the Muslim Brotherhood. And it really kind of blows your mind. I don't understand how they reconcile these things. I really don't. They must have like the most compartmentalized brains ever, like more than your average male, because they seem to be able to take out this, homosexual marriage thing and put it out on the table and, we'll talk about this, put it back, and then pull out of the other side of their head this Muslim box. And say, oh, yes, and we support Muslims, too, who, of course, hate homosexuals and hang them and behead them. And that's what the Muslims do. So how do they put these things together? How do they advocate for women's rights and also advocate for Islam? It does not make any sense. Islam is the most repressive idea on the face of the planet when it comes to women. The most repressive. And one-third of the world's population, which is Muslim, basically, which means that one-sixth of the world's population, women who are Muslim, are absolutely repressed and have zero rights. And yet, the liberal media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Morning Joe and MSNBC and all their talking heads, and basically all the rest of the alphabet soup, as they were referred to earlier in this program, the ABC, NBC, CBS, all these guys too, have no problem advocating for Islam. And more specifically, advocating for the Muslim Brotherhood, which absolutely blows my mind. This is a terrorist organization. It's sort of like the mother terrorist, or it's the mothership for all of the rest of these. Whether or not you hear that conventional wisdom says that Al-Qaeda and ISIS hate each other and all that kind of stuff, they all share the same goal: to spread Sharia all over the planet, to wage jihad until anybody who is an infidel is dead, to establish the caliphate. All of them have that same goal. All of them. And so if there are personality differences at some level between ISIS and Al-Qaeda, who cares? They are trying to achieve the same thing. They come out of the same wellspring, and that wellspring is the Muslim Brotherhood. So this editorial in the New York Times editorial pages, their opinion page, it just blows my mind. I just want to, they talk about how tragic it is that Mohamed Morsi, who was in their mind Egypt's first democratically elected president. Actually, let's address that real quick, because there are widespread allegations that that election was entirely rigged, which would not surprise me. Would it surprise you in the least? Really? So Mohamed Morsi, Egypt's first quote-unquote democratically elected president, could be hanged to death by the state. That would be a profound injustice, considering the sham trial that landed him on death row. Okay, let's just start there. What they're doing is they're cloaking their advocacy in a call for due process, something that they care for very little when it comes to our own shores. They don't give a crap about due process. They don't give a hoot. They don't care about the law. They don't care about the rule of law. They care what they think needs to happen here and abroad. So let's just keep that in mind. Later in this article, they quote this scholar visiting professor at Georgetown. His name is Imad Shaheen. And before I read this quote, full disclosure is he's also been condemned to death by this new government. So he's probably going to have a little bit of rancor for this. I get that. He says, "These sentences are yet another manifestation of the deeply troubling way the Egyptian judiciary has been used as a tool to settle political disagreements by the harshest and most repressive means possible." Let's talk about Sharia law for just a second, okay? How much due process is there in Sharia? It's just a convenient aside for them. If they want to try to appeal to the West, they want to try to appeal to these liberals who aren't going to think too deeply into the process and say, oh, their due process was violated, therefore they shouldn't be hanged to death. You know what? They are terrorists. They are terrorists. These are not political disagreements. No matter what Professor Shaheen says, the Egyptian judiciary is being used as a tool to punish criminals and terrorists, not to adjudicate political disagreements. Understand that. Understand what the Muslim Brotherhood is about. It is about subjecting the rest of the world to Islam. Islam means submission. It means submission. That is what they are trying to spread throughout the world. Egypt is a country that is right now at war with radical Islam. They're in defense mode. But the thing is that Obama and his ilk, they're put off right now because the new government, investigated and detained some members of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt who were part of Obama's administration. Surprise, surprise. And namely, they were advisors to Hillary Clinton. And this is the part that makes your stomach turn. Okay, so let's get specific. There's a guy named Gihad El-Haddad. And he was Hillary Clinton's advisor. And he was arrested by the Muslim Brotherhood, he was arrested by Egyptian police. He was a spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood when he was arrested. Three security officials reported this. And he was detained with two other Brotherhood officials in an apartment in Cairo. He was a chief of staff to a deputy leader within the Muslim Brotherhood. You got to understand who this guy is, okay? So he was high up. He was a high up spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood, had been in the Obama administration. So now Obama does not want to support this new government. He wants to condemn them. He wants to get his lapdog media, namely the New York Times in this case, to condemn these sentences of death for these terrorists, because his own terrorists, his own homegrown terrorists, Obama's own brothers within the Brotherhood have been detained and arrested. Okay? That is the thing that you have to understand. You have to understand that he's put out. Obama is part of this conspiracy. I don't think there's any two ways you can look back over the last 7 years and not understand that. I think most of us understand that he is in no way, shape, or form a Christian. I think most of us understand that. All you have to do is watch Reverend Wright speak for a little while and understand that in no way was Obama introduced to and accepted. I don't know the man's heart. I don't. I'll just put that out there. But it just seems highly unlikely, we'll put it that way. Given his background, given the questions about his parentage, given the alliances throughout his life, given that he went to a Muslim school when he lived in Indonesia, given that he claimed that he was Indonesian and Muslim when he applied for school here, this type of background does not give me any comfort that he is going to fight the enemies of America, namely those who want our destruction, to subjugate us to Islam, to subjugate us to Sharia law. And that is where it's going. So you watch all of this throughout the last 7 years, you start to put these pieces together. If you haven't had the opportunity, let me just throw this out there. If you haven't had the opportunity to see John Guandolo's piece, Understanding the Threat, it's at understandingthethreat.com. There is a bunch of resources there. And then there's also a link to Frank Gaffney of the, and I'm going to get his, I can't remember which organization he's with, but Frank Gaffney and John Guandolo, I saw them both speak at Western Conservative Summit last year. Scare the living daylights out of me. What they were talking about as far as the spread of Sharia law and the assault on our civilization. And this is where they're going. This is where the entire thing is going. And so for the New York Times to take this apologetic attitude, to say this, here's another part of it. Since then, this is from the New York Times editorial board. The country's leaders have waged a relentless campaign against Islamists. Yeah, who have been maligned by the state-run press, detained indiscriminately, and prosecuted in mass trials that lack due process. The crackdown has driven many Egyptians into exile, depriving the country of moderate voices. Okay, wait a second. The Muslim Brotherhood is the voice of moderation? Really? So what the New York Times is saying is that the Egyptians actually recognize the reality of the threat that they are looking at, that they're staring down the barrel of, and did not treat these terrorists the way that the New York Times did. In other words, they didn't pander. That is what the New York Times is saying. We'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. We're talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, what do you guys think about this? Do you think I'm being too harsh on the Muslim Brotherhood? Do you think that maybe I ought to cut these guys some slack? Maybe they really are the voice of moderation in the Islam world and in the Muslim world, and I ought to embrace that maybe that's where our reformation will come from. Maybe that's where we will see finally the violent forces in Islam moderated by the Muslim Brotherhood. I just don't think I can go there. The thing is that there are way too many connections. There's way too much shared ancestry. There's way too many lines that draw from the Muslim Brotherhood into Al-Qaeda, into ISIS, into Hamas, into Boko Haram, into all of these lines that are drawn directly to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. And of course, directly to 9/11. And that, for me, is reason enough to keep, well, first of all, to put the Muslim Brotherhood itself on the terror list, okay? It's a terrorist organization. It's already been proven. And in our courts, where we do actually have some due process, surprise, surprise, liberal media, the Holy Land Foundation case showed all of this, showed the connections. Muslim Brotherhood is the mothership for all of the rest of this. They came to America in the 1960s and set up all of these other Islamic organizations, the Muslim Students Organization, the CARE is part of that, the Center for American Islamic Relations, all of these other Islamic organizations sprung from the Muslim Brotherhood. That is where they got their start. That's where everything had its inception. And so to now think that the Muslim Brotherhood is something else, that it's some moderate organization that's advocating for a decline in radical Islamism, it's advocating for a reformation within Islam. It ain't. That's just naivete and stupidity to think that that's what's going on. You have to understand the threat. You have to understand the threat that they represent. And more than that, anybody within our government who has any association with the Muslim Brotherhood, gone. Period. End of story. Just as if they were part of MS-13 or something, you know? I mean, you have to cut the ties. You have to cut them out of any sort of secure position, any sort of access to our elected officials, especially when you're talking about the Office of the Presidency, when you're talking about the Secretary of State. That alone, for me, disqualifies Hillary Clinton because her judgment is so poor. It's beyond poor. Here's the bigger problem, and this is the thing that really terrifies me. Now, the Clinton cash stuff is bad. All of the lining of Hillary and Bill's pockets that they did by utilizing and leveraging her position as Secretary of State, that level of corruption is awful. And should have her thrown in jail, and Bill, probably Chelsea, and maybe the grandbaby too. You know, they all belong in jail. They're all corrupt. They're all fraudsters. I totally get that. But that's money. That's just money for their own purposes. The Muslim Brotherhood and their connections, the Clintons' connections to this terrorist Islamic organization, is deeper than money. It's ideological. And that is infinitely more dangerous. infinitely more dangerous than just being about money. And that's the thing that terrifies me. I still do not understand. I wish someone would explain to me. There's a few things in politics that I don't get. I don't know why Jews vote Democrat. I have never figured that out, in large part because of this issue. Muslims want Jews annihilated, and the Democrats support the Muslims, so the Jews support the Democrats. There's some piece here that is not linking up for me. I wish somebody would explain that to me at some point in time. And I don't understand how Democrats can be pro-gay and pro-woman, pro-feminism, and yet be pro-Muslim. I don't get this. Let me give that this caveat. I do get that integrity is not nearly as important to liberals as it is to you and me. Okay, I do get that. Making sure, and when I say integrity, I don't mean character. I mean that your entire belief system hangs together and is consistent. That's when I talk about integrity, I'm talking about the integrity of the system. That's what I'm talking about. Their belief system, they don't require that. It's okay for them to hold contradictory beliefs in their minds. But it seems to me that there's got to be, at some point, some cognitive dissonance that says, yeah, I need to do some gymnastics before I can get over to this other position. I don't understand. And for them to just continue to wage this war on the American people, to support, be advocates for these folks who are waging a war on any infidel walking the face of the planet. This is the case. They continue to advocate. They continue to be apologists for them. It does kind of blow your mind. There's an article. I'll actually post this article, both of these articles from the New York Times on the Grassroots Radio Colorado Facebook page. There was an article that the New York Times published soon after Morsi came to office, after he was elected. And I use that term loosely. So the article's from June 24th, 2012. And again, it is full of apologia for the Muslim Brotherhood. So at least they've been consistent over the years. I suppose we can grant them that. We've got Jim from Denver on the line. Jim, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Well, I was so happy to hear you talking about Obama.
Okay, because I never do that.
Well, it's impossible not to talk about a man who's essentially a dictator and a traitor.
Right.
How can you not? But the fact is that there are still people in this country, so many of them, that are still supportive of this guy. It's just disheartening.
It is disheartening. So what do we do about it, Jim?
Well, I just have to say that I'm really happy listening to you because I think it's fabulous the way you're going after him and Hillary is just
she would be the second biggest mistake we've ever made, I think, and maybe the biggest, since we should have learned from Obama. Not sure that we're going to get that.
I'm just a little I said disheartened, and that's a weak way of stating it. The fact that people are even considering this person to be president,
yeah,
just because of her gender. It's just,
it's more than that, though. It's more than that, though, because they do have Elizabeth Warren. You know, if a woman was all that was required, then why not put up Elizabeth Warren, who doesn't have anywhere near, she has the Pocahontas scandal and that is it. And she's also got an actual set of principles.
Socialist principles,
and I will grant you that. I agree with not one of them, but she is a principled person. I think that a contest between Elizabeth Warren and Ted Cruz would be an actual contest of ideas. That would be an interesting race instead of corruption and corruption.
All I have to say is that we're a country of 365 million people plus, probably 30 million illegals. And out of that group, that we can't come up with someone better than...
That's a great point.
It's just astounding.
It is. It is astounding.
It makes me glad to think that I don't have that much longer to go.
Oh, don't say that, Jim. Don't say that at all.
But Hillary Clinton has a grandchild, and she thinks that the money is going to insulate her grandchild from the insanity that she's unleashing on this country, but it won't. And that's just a fact.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think that Bill's going to spend all the money on his bimbo habit, but you know, you never know. Jim, thank you so much for calling into Grassroots Radio. I do appreciate it. You know, it can get disheartening. Don't get disheartened. Don't, because we still have things that we have to do. We still have things that we can do, and we are doing them. We have elected new leadership for the Colorado GOP, and that is going to lead us in the right direction. We have an incredibly strong grassroots conservative movement going on, not just here in Colorado, but all the way across the country. Get involved. You know, that is really the best way to roll back that feeling of helplessness is to no longer be helpless, to get involved and be part of the solution. That is the best way to get your brain moving in the right direction. Get other people involved. Continue to grow this movement. And the Tea Party is probably one of the best things that ever happened in this country. I really do believe that, because we've reawakened in this country the conversation about those first principles. We've reawakened the conversation about how to hold our elected leaders accountable and how to call them out. That is the thing that needs to be done. It's what I try to do here on the radio. I do my best. So thank you guys so much for joining in and listening to me tonight and being part of this, because this is what we need. This is what we need. We have to have folks involved, informed, inspired, and ignited. So remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.